The numbers told the story, they always do.
This is A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is A Numbers Game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Fubo, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. It's Gil Alexander. Jeff Parlay is here as well. Jeffrey, producer number 5 and 8. How you doing, man? You good?
Good morning, Gil.
Jeff Parles, who also hosts the Bet Center on the weekend. Is that what you're hosting on the weekend these days?
It's a rotational basis at this point. Wherever I'm needed, I go.
Okay.
So I'm with Wes on Saturday. Betting. I guess that's betting across America, technically.
Isn't and you'll be here doing a numbers game later this month for a couple weeks, I believe.
Whenever you're gone, yes.
That should be fun. On the show today, this should be fun. Todd Wishnev joins us from his mom's Cork attic in somewhere in Pennsylvania, in Pittsburgh, to be precise. See his baseball betting going on, his in-games. Mark Borchert, though, hour number two. This is our Q2 derivative show on Major League Baseball. If you've watched this show for years, if you've listened to the Beating the Book podcast, the Betting Dork podcast before that, you know that Mark and I have done this for the better part of a decade. Q1, Q2, Q3 Major League Baseball season. What we do is we sort of review all of the betting stats. And the object is, what is narrative? What is predictive? Talking about widely available stats, money line, run line, umpires, first five betting numbers for teams, who are the best, who are the worst, and of course, the very proprietary on this show, first inning pitching stats, which we'll go over as well. We'll do all that in the second hour. But first, as always, joined on Tuesday mornings by this gentleman. He hosts not one, but two podcasts, co-hosting, of course, The Deep Dive with Andy Molitor, and NBC Sports Bet the Edge with his buddy Sarah Perlman. It's Drew Dinsick at @whale_capper. How you doing, Drew?
I'm doing well. Happy belated 4th of July to you and the crew, everybody listening. I hope everybody had a fun, safe holiday.
You too. I can't see you. I have to look over here to see you. This screen is not on in front of me this morning. But I trust you're doing well. Listen, I hope your Wimbledon has gone better than me. I had a play on Jewel Niemeyer this morning in straight sets. She was up a set and a break. That didn't get there. She may end up winning here. She's up a break in the third. But the big news, so I hope yours is going. I joked after hitting four futures in the month of June that I was going to go 2-17 in Wimbledon. Hasn't been that bad, but it has not been a stellar one. Has yours been good?
I started out almost that poorly. It was close. The first week was absolute chaos in terms of my action. And, I had a decent equity on a bunch of guys who go out with COVID. That happens too. The fate of this tournament before it even started kind of rode on the fortunes of one lady, and she remains alive.
She remains alive.
And that is Ons Jabeur, of course. She's going later today against Buzkova, and I make her about -400 there, so feeling cautiously optimistic she gets through to a semifinal here. At this point, that's kind of made up for what has been a pretty lackluster performance for me in terms of match-by-match betting. I was on the opposite side of you this morning. I had over 2.5 sets of +140 in the Niemeyer match, so...
You got there.
It wasn't even a really sophisticated handicap. Basically, just when you have a quarterfinal between two inexperienced players at that level, the tightness and the chokiness tends to produce three sets on the women's side. At least that's what I've kind of noticed through the years. Like the Aliyah Tomljanovic versus Rybakina tomorrow, like that. That smells like three sets, really. The idea that that's a clean win for either of those ladies seems unlikely. It's overall it's been a lackluster match by match. But on the men's side, I think we're obviously looking at right now.
This is the big
Novak
thing.
Novak Djokovic is in trouble.
Yes. Down a set, down a break. And so, like with you, the match by match has not been stellar. But I got this Rafa future sitting out there, which could basically save the tournament for me, to be honest with you. And right now, and I did jump in. Did you jump in on Sinner here before he got into minus money at all?
No.
I did.
Have kind of been waiting for I've been waiting for Djokovic to flip the switch and find his level, because he has not looked like the player we know and love.
Nope.
At least some people love, I guess. On grass,
some
he's just
do.
He's not. He's not producing very much quality at all. And Sinner, for what it's worth, when there's been high leverage points, he has stepped up his game and produced a pretty consistent high level of tennis that I did not expect from him in this moment with these stakes. The experience gap here is so enormous. I think you can't count out Djokovic until he's facing match point. And at that point, we've seen him come back from more perilous situations against higher quality players. So
1,000%. There's nothing I can disagree with there. Yes.
This is one of those where when it's in the books, Sinner wins, I'll believe it.
Yeah, Sinner trying to go up two breaks in the second set. But everything you said about Djokovic, he ain't dead till he's dead. The Jabeur thing, getting back to Jabeur, you have Jabeur at 33-1, is that correct?
That's right. You remember back when she was in the Rome final against Iga. I was scratching my head because she was coming off of a Madrid title. She's playing her best clay tennis of her life by a mile. And, you know, with the Ash Barty out of the mix, I had her as the highest rated grass player coming into the grass court swing, and just was perplexed at the prices, 33-1. Like, some of the players who were priced more aggressively in the market were just, it made absolutely zero sense, especially in a field without the Belarusian women or the Russian women. And, and as we kind of talked about, we can kind of reflect, I guess, a little bit on Iga's, pretty unfortunate fortnight here. But, her camp not getting her any warm up on grass, basically kind of pointing her towards the U.S. Open and using this as sort of an extended break here in the middle of this, the calendar, that checks out to me. Like, I get that strategy is in play, and I think she should be the prohibitive favorite for the U.S. Open. Mm-hmm. But, I think, the fact that she was not pointing towards this tournament made it that much crazier that you could have gotten Jabeur at those prices. And Jabeur's done nothing but kind of answer every question I've had about her at every step of the way so far. She's had some tight moments in some early round matches against players she was much better than, and she... she pulled it together and she just thumped the first three rounds. And, she produced a level at the end of her round three match against Perry where it was so high quality over those last three games that it was like, if she can continue to play this well, no one's beating her. And as I sit here now, I think she should be the odds on favorite to win the title.
What would you make a Jabeur-Halep final?
So that's the scary. Scary out. Halep, obviously the only player with slam pedigree in this entire field left.
And numbers just as good.
Numbers just as good, although as far as a grass rating, I give Jabeur a decent margin. So I would make Jabeur minus 150-ish, but ooh. I would expect the market's going to give you around a pick'em.
Yeah, I was going to say that seems way high to me. that seems way high to me. But that's the collision course, right?
I favor Jabeur. So,
yes, I know. I'm
not giving you a neutral opinion here.
I want to say this, though. Just sort of macro, because this applies, I think, to Dan Weston as well. Isn't it interesting? Because the podcast that we did, the Beating the Book podcast before Wimbledon, and we do them before all the slams, I feel like I kind of got all the macro things correct, right? I had the Swiatek 9-1. Don't add to that. Certainly don't play her at plus 150. This is her worst surface. She's never won a tournament on this. Her winning streak is not going to go on forever, right? I felt like the Orkots quarter was the most random. I didn't agree with you and Dan about him being sort of above the fray. That ended up happening in the first round, which was just unbelievable. Didn't expect that. And generally speaking, I thought when the draw came out, that Rafa really got the benefit and immediately grabbed that future. But yet, on a day-to-day basis, not at all good, right? So I feel like grass is sort of my nemesis in this way, that the smaller sample size really does come back to get me. I don't know if you feel that way about grass, but that's certainly my takeaway anyway in this fortnight.
Yeah, it's usually not like this. This has been an outlier as far as my Wimbledons years past.
Yeah.
And honestly, like the COVID stuff and, Berrettini and Cilic and RBA all going down.
That threw it all out.
That really changed a lot of the fabric of this tournament and the futures market in particular, because, at least you brought up the Hurkacz upset. Like, that was, unfortunate. But, I think I would still make that bet for him to win the second quarter. I got plus 270 all over the place, and it closed like plus 130 or 40.
Well, that's a beautiful price. Yes.
Yeah, make that bet every time and don't look back. But You know, I think overall it's been a strange tournament with the, you know, with the removal of the Russian and Belarusian players and the no points at stake and, you know, some of the just some of the other kind of macro stuff that you mentioned, you know, I do think was broadly on point. You know, it would be amazing for Rafa to come through and win this title after having zero warm-up on
grass. Could you imagine?
Like, that is... That would be crazy. And his path is not easy at this point.
And then be three quarters of the way to the Grand Slam, which is the real headline if that happened, right? Like, we've never had that in our, I mean, Rod Laver was, what, 1969. So in our lifetime, we've not had that, you know, where someone got three quarters of the way through a slam.
Well,
we're a long way from that.
Djokovic did it last year, but we kind of, I believe, as a tennis betting collective, kind of knew Medvedev was going to get him.
That's right.
At the U.S. Open, so we didn't consider it a realistic shot at the calendar slam.
But isn't that funny how quickly I forgot that last year.
But Nadal, yeah. Nadal improbably coming back against Medvedev at the Australian Open still feels like a fever dream. Not just because it was happening in the middle of the night and I had been on 2 weeks of no sleep, but, you know, that was insane comeback from him. And then his French Open run on the broken, you know, with the foot injury was ridiculous. And then to back that up with a Wimbledon title on his worst surface with no warm up would be absolutely insane. And he hasn't really been tested to this point in terms of level of competition, but it's about to get nasty for him. Fritz is not an easy draw next. Fritz obviously beat him at Indian Wells head-to-head in the final this year. Kyrgios has a meaningful win against Nadal head-to-head at Wimbledon. So he's got his work cut out for him just to get to the final.
A set point for Sinner to try to go up two sets to nothing, to love. Two sets to love on Novak. We shall see. Basketball implications from all the drama off court. Any football bets added? Drew will let us know what he's done. On the other side, Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM with all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Just download the BetMGM app today. It won't take you but a few seconds and stop by any MGM casino on the strip with your state-issued ID to open an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Gil Alexander with Drew Dinsick from NBC Sports Bet the Edge podcast, and of course, also the Deep Dive podcast. Jeff Parlay doing a deep dive on Yannick Sinner's Italian heritage, wondering how someone named Yannick Sinner could be so Italian. And what did you find? That he's like in a region right next to Germany and Liechtenstein?
Liechtenstein, Switzerland, and Austria all bordered. And it's an area of Italy that apparently over 60% of the population actually speaks German as their first language.
Fugazi Italian.
So it's a little bit different.
All right. Thanks for the deep dive on that. Appreciate it. All right. So, Drew, the drama of the NBA offseason. We went through this extensively on this show on Friday, which is to say that the morning after KD requested a trade from the Brooklyn Nets and really went through why his requested destinations, Phoenix and Miami, don't really work out trade-wise that cleanly for the Brooklyn Nets, at least nothing that'll get them that excited. Whereas places like New Orleans, Toronto, and dare I even say it, Golden State actually have the best packages to send to the Brooklyn Nets for KD, who are not required, right? It's not compulsory that they trade KD to where he wants to go. They're going to do, by the way, their owner, all indications are, he's had it with both KD and Kyrie sort of dictating these last few years, and he's ready to sort of say, this is my team, you'll go where, I'm paraphrasing now, you'll go where I tell you to go, what's best for the team. Anyway, all of this, in addition to other moves that have occurred, that's obviously the headline move, has triggered some thoughts on what might be the best teams to win or the best bet to win the NBA title next year. I'm not sure if it has or has not for you.
Well, it definitely has thrown some cold water on the Nets.
That's sure.
That's about all I can tell you. Realistically, this is still completely wide open. And I don't think that, you know, the fact that you know, the pieces were in place for the Suns to make the deal, and that it didn't materialize kind of right in that moment sort of spells, you know, there's a problem there of some sort, either in terms of what the, you know, the correct compensation is, or, you know, just the ability to even get it done with the way that the rules work in the NBA. But either way, it sounds like the Suns is drying up as far as an option. The Heat, similarly, I agree with you. Like, there are some pretty obvious problems with the, you know, with the way that that trade would ultimately go down. So that seems unlikely. And I think realistically, the Pelicans and the Raptors in particular, those two teams stand out as you have an immediate upgrade from fringe playoff team to title champ, you know, title contender. And the fact that the Raptors have done it once with Kawhi, you know, in our recent memory, you know, should keep you very, very in tune with what they're trying to do as far as the franchise goes. And if, you know, if people are clutching their pearls and saying we can't give up Scottie Barnes, I got news for you. Scottie Barnes is not Kevin Durant. And yes, he's, you know, has a very bright future ahead of him, but, you know,
excellent
your chances
use of clutching the pearls, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Your chances to win, you have a finite number of opportunities, and Durant has 2 years, in my opinion, at least 2 years of elite basketball left where he could, elevate a team to championship contention immediately. And, I think you take that chance if you're the Toronto Raptors or the New Orleans Pelicans. So, I like those two shouts as far as options go. And, you know, I have no inside information on this. It does feel like the Nets are asking for impossibly high prices in all of these trade rumors. You know, I don't know that I would give up as much as what's being asked by the Nets for Durant in particular, just because, like, you know, you're getting 4 years, presume, you know, of his service, but really only two of those years, I think, are you getting, you know, likely to get a level where you're going to, you know, be a true championship contender. So,
you know, and Drew, I hear what you're saying, but obviously you also know, here's the thing, right? Rudy Gobert just got traded for, right, almost a, like, literally four players and four first rounders.
Yeah.
And then we have the Paul George precedent from a few years back, where it was like three number ones, two swaps, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, right? So there is precedent for massive packages. So the Nets are probably thinking to themselves, your point about age, well taken, but they're probably throwing that little nugget out of their brains, right?
Oh, and
sure. They're like, we're not. So the Suns, by the way, Bet Rivers has this up currently, Jeff. This is Kevin Durant's next team, 2022-2023. The Suns are plus 125. And if you're the Nets, you would have wanted Devin Booker. They just signed Devin Booker to the extension, so it's not going to be Devin Booker. So you'd get DeAndre Ayton. Oh, by the way, you just signed Nick Claxton to a deal. So does, like, DeAndre Ayton even excite you? And then some, you know, some mishmash of Mikal Bridges on down the line. And I don't think that excites the Nets. The Raptors are plus 250. The aforementioned Heat, who I don't think it works out for, again, rookie designated rookie extension, where you can't have two players via trade, so they would have to move Ben Simmons, who signed that deal with the Sixers, and they acquired, the Nets did by trade, so you couldn't do it with Bam, in other words, so that becomes problematic. You certainly, if you're rebuilding, Jimmy Butler's not going to be part of that trade, one would think. You don't want Kyle Lowry in a rebuild. Then what do you have? Tyler Hero and, you know, the poo-poo platter. So, I don't know. It's interesting here, you know, because the Pelicans are 8-1. The Raptors are plus 250, but the Pelicans are 8-1, and then there sits the Warriors. I just want to point that out. It's 16-1. It's not going to happen. I just want to point that out. Anyway, fascinating to talk about, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I think you know, you glossed over the Rudy Gobert deal, and the reaction to that was, you know, predictably astonishment at the price.
Yes.
And I, you know, there were a couple of funny wrinkles about that. Obviously, you know, the meme that went around social media for, and is still going around, frankly, the Brian Windhorst, like, you know, spinning, what is going to happen here? There's some mysterious plays at foot, like. Like, anyone is surprised that the Jazz blew it up? Like, we've been expecting that since they were eliminated in round one.
Right.
But, you know, what they got back for Rudy Gobert was very, 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 you know, sizable haul. I think it's fine if you're Minnesota and you want to make this bet that you have the core in place and all you need is that kind of defensive center to really anchor a two-way team. And that's, I think that was a fine bet to make. They see themselves with Anthony Edwards as having a future superstar. They're going to be in the mix for the playoffs every year. They're not going to be in the lottery again, and they're not going to have any more bites at the apple to really, try to bring in youth to put around these guys. Kat and Rudy are obviously a little bit of an uncomfortable fit. I'm not exactly sure that Rudy makes up for all the defensive, liabilities that you'll have out there on the floor now, particularly if Kat's being asked to guard power fours on the other side. I would still say that this does upgrade the Timberwolves pretty dramatically, and particularly in the regular season. Like, this Timberwolves team is probably, you're talking about, top three, top four in the West right now in terms of wins over the balance of the regular season. And I think, whether they can put anything together in the playoffs and whether they have a unit that, can make up for the inefficiencies of Gobert on offense and the inefficiencies of Towns on defense remains to be seen, but they have a whole year to figure it out. Yeah. So I'm not going to I think there was a little bit of overreaction in terms of, pointing at the price tag and saying that this was a terrible deal when ultimately they have a pretty outstanding core, closing five, but on paper, particularly in the regular season.
Great starting five. It'll be interesting to see where their season win total is, because I'm with you. That feels like a better bet than any futures do. But I was just bringing it up as here's what Brooklyn sees across right. the way, so this is what they're going to want. Real quick, because we only have a minute left, have you added any NFL wagers since last we spoke?
I'm starting to get a little bit of work done. And I started on the NFC side because I feel like that's where most of your long shots are available. And in general, my philosophy for betting and NFL this time of season is looking for the real long prices, try to capture those, put them in pocket now. I think that the value, at least relative to market in the NFC right now for me, is with the New Orleans Saints. And I think any kind of way to attack that, either through division prices or trying to capture a little upside with that offense, potentially, and Jameis Winston coming back, I think is worth a flyer at this point. Overall, there's not a ton of obvious misprices, I don't think, in the NFL market. This is going to be a tough run up of creative content for those of us in the business because I got to tell you, there's haves and have nots. There's quarterbacks who can realistically make a run at a Super Bowl, and there are teams that are very clearly lost in terms of not even sure what the philosophy is of a rebuild at this point. So the Falcons of the world, the Panthers of the world, the Bears of the world.
The Saints are interesting though, just because anecdotally I haven't heard a more varied opinion on them. But the Saints themselves clearly all in. They think they can compete for that division.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Talented roster.
Thank you, Drew, as always. Appreciate it, man.
Best of luck.
At @whale_capper, Todd Wishnev on Baseball on the Other Side, Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Numbers Game proudly brought to you by BetMGM Nevada. Don't forget, the VSiN Summer Special is here as well. $19. That's all it will cost you to get everything VSiN has to offer from now to the end of July. Sign up today. You'll get VSiN's daily best bets, including Adam Burke's daily MLB best bets, NFL preseason coverage, premium articles on golf, UFC, USFL, and NASCAR. And if you want the full VSiN experience, which features a daily best bets email, every edition of Point Spread Weekly, use of our betting tools, and a live video stream whenever you want it, the cost is only $19 to be a subscriber through July 31st. Sign up now at VSiN.com/summer. It's Gil Alexander. By the way, Jeff Parlay here as well. There is an offshore that has offered a prop of who will be the next PGA member to leave for the LIV Golf Series. Who will be the next? I don't know what the...
Not cynical at all.
Not cynical. I don't know what the limits are on this. I have no idea. Any guesses as to who the short shot would be of current PGA members? I don't know how they would come up with this. But next PGA member to leave for LIV Golf odds. Do you know who the short shot
would be? My guess would have been Ricky Fowler. That would have been my guess, since his name has been swirling around a lot.
I don't even see
that.
Him.
And
he's not even on this list.
Yeah, that's kind of surprising to me.
It's co-favorites. Matt Kuchar and Webb Simpson, both at +250.
Yeah, I guess Kuchar makes sense. He can go to another tour where he can choke away leads in the final day.
There have been an international incident or two. I remember one anyway with Matt Kuchar. Tony Finau 3-1, Hideki Matsuyama 4-1, Xander's. These numbers are ridiculous.
No, I mean, again, it's a very cynical market there, Gil.
Xander plus 650, Victor Hovland plus 650, Morikawa plus 650. Let me tell you something. If Hovland or Morikawa, a player of that ilk, young and awesome, young and elite, one of those guys bounces, seismic.
Don't think Colin Morikawa is going anywhere based off what he said.
Anyway, that's the kind of stuff you can bet on if you're into that kind of thing. You think LIV will change its name? It's got to change its name, right?
They're changing it, but I'm not entirely. They are making it a different name, but I haven't seen what the new name will be next year. They just need Greg Norman to stop talking.
That's cue the jokes on what it could be called, right?
Yeah.
Boy. Just a collection of some of the most fascinating human beings have made that move, that's for sure. Todd Wishnev joins us. Speaking of fascinating human beings, sorry to put you in that same sentence, Todd. It's Todd Wishnev from his mom's Quark Attic, star of the Showtime docuseries Action from back in the day, and of course, star of the Megapod as well. Shaven and having lost tons of weight, can we get, first of all, hello, Todd, how are you from his mom's Quark Attic?
Hi, Gilly, how are you?
Okay, I'm sorry. All right, let's start. Let's rehash the bet, the weight loss bet. Let's get this out of the way first. You and Steve Fezzik, back-to-back Hilton Super Contest football handicapping winner from back in the day. You and Steve are in a weight loss contest. Give us the rules again.
Basically, we started on May 12th. I was already 13 days into my journey, down from 304.6 to 289 at that point. And we made a bet that between May 12th of 2022 to May 12th of 2023, if I weigh at any time weigh less than him, I win 9,000. If I don't, I lose 3,000. And that's because I'm 62 pounds behind at the start, 289 to 227. He was only 227 at the time.
And now?
So, well, we are now on July 5th. So that's what, about almost 50-something days later, I am now down to 252.6, and he is at 212. So I'm about 40 pounds behind instead of 62 pounds behind.
Okay.
So I'm cutting into the lead.
Pace yourself. Pace yourself. You got time. Fezzik's not playing around either, though, it should be noted. But you.
Well, I mean, since I started this, it's been 66 days, and I've lost 52 pounds.
66 days, 52 pounds. Jeff has a wedding next year. Jeff wants to, as most Americans do prior to their wedding, they want to lose weight. Not just Americans. Those are the only people I know getting married. They want to lose weight for the beautiful wedding pictures. Jeff, you've expressed an interest in calling Todd and learning his techniques, yes?
Well, no. Well, first off, Todd is...
Don't say no. You said that exactly to me.
Todd is the expert at dropping pounds quickly. He's great at this. I just, at some point, I will talk to Todd about a diet that I will inevitably follow for 10 days and then see where the discipline's at.
So exactly what I said, Todd. That's what he wants. He wants to lose that weight. He wants to look good for the pictures, and you are the guy. Is this a possible side business for you to teach people how to lose weight?
You know, somebody else called me and wanted a whole pep talk, and I said maybe I should just have a weight loss coaching program. Where I have a morning call in with people every day. And so it's something I've definitely been thinking about. We'll see if I actually get around to doing it.
Does eating big cheese balls with olive oil drizzled over it, will that allow me to lose weight, or is that not part of a detection?
I have found that that is not the most effective use of diet in the program. No.
As you have mocked before. Okay, baseball, you're betting it every single day. No pre-flop whatsoever, just in-game.
We're not going to talk about the fact that the Zoftig girl lost to.
I already did.
Tatiana Maria.
I'm happy to talk about it again. About it. Okay, she was up a set, up a break, and then it all went to hell.
She got sliced by the. That she was playing the big T game. That's what I play.
Todd texts me during all of these matches and says how much better his slice is than all these professional players. It's fantastic. I'm sure people.
I'm not saying it's tremendously better. Slightly better. Slightly.
Zoftig, by the way, for those who follow the Yiddish language from Todd. Yes. Okay. Yes. No, we already said how
that woman could have definitely used some nutritional help. There's no doubt about that.
It has not been a good grass season. It has not been a good tournament for young Gil, and that's what Drew was saying as well. But we still have some futures that can get there, so we'll see if we can salvage.
Are you watching Sinner? Are you watching this Sinner craziness?
Sinner up two sets.
I took Sinner live, so I don't know what will happen. I'll probably blow it
because I took him live as well. I took him live as well when he was still plus money, but right now Djokovic up a break in the third set, so here comes Novak, as we knew this would happen, right?
Yeah, of course.
Can we get to baseball for a second? Because we only have
a
few minutes left.
Sure, let's talk baseball.
You keep filibustering. Okay, sorry. So just in game, no preflop, correct? That's still your thing.
No. I play more preflop baseball than any other sport, but I do. Play it in game, of course, as well.
Do you have any preflop for us today?
I haven't really looked everything over yet today.
Okay.
So I don't want to just jump off the, you know.
Give us as you.
Although I just right off the top of my head, I love betting against Chris Archer, although he's been good lately. But yeah, I haven't really looked it over yet.
Okay. What is give us the preflop sort of trend here this year? Not necessarily trend. That's not the word that I'm looking for. But sort of something you have noticed cropping up here that you have been able to exploit more often than not, Major League Baseball betting.
One thing I've been able to not lose on is don't bet Tigers games over because they can't hit under any circumstances. I mean, I think they average 3 runs a game and they're just horrendous. So just don't bet Tigers game over. They just can't go over. So
the Tigers, we're going to go next hour. We're doing the Q2 MLB derivatives show with Mark Borchard, where we go through all kinds of betting lenses, right? Full game, money line, run lines, first fives, umpires, first innings, but first fives. And this is always the, why betting is always a puzzle, right? The Tigers are one of the worst first five teams in all of baseball. You were just talking about the Tigers and their totals. They're one of the worst first five betting teams in all of baseball. And bam, there they go, 4-0 run in first fives here, largely because they were playing the Tigers, who were even worse in first five. But again, with all of this stuff, right,
the Tigers were playing the Tigers?
I'm sorry, the Royals were playing the Tigers, pardon me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that the Tigers just, in the case of the Tigers, pardon me, the Tigers, right, it was the Royals who bucked the trend, pardon me. The Tigers just keep doing what they've been doing, to your point, just bad in so many ways, first fives being another one. They are by far the worst first five team in all of baseball, and you say the same with totals as well. So there are things that will, ebb and flow, and then there's some things that just sustain in a way.
Well, it's funny that you say that because I notice with under teams in baseball, in a lot of other sports, you can have an under team and then the bookmakers adjust and then they come back to normalcy. But I've noticed through the years in baseball, they just can't adjust the totals low enough in certain teams, and the teams can end up, 55 and 107 to the under, some crazy number because it how low can you go to get the over to happen when a team just can't hit? So I do notice that in baseball, that's the one thing where, teams can just keep going under forever.
Yeah, and then the A's can explode on any given day as they did yesterday. Right, but I mean, things happen over a 162-game schedule, but largely the chasm between the haves and the have-nots, as we've talked about in baseball for so many years now, just keeps getting wider and wider. And some of these teams, is there anything worse in sports? Let's just close up with this. Anything worse in sports betting than betting on a team that has an anemic baseball offense? I find that over the years to be the most futile feeling of so many different bad feelings in sports betting that you could have. But that's one of them where if you're back,
game's over. Game's over because you're like, okay, well now I have the top of my order coming up in the seventh and they can't hit and they get out and then that's it. The rest of the order ain't going to get hit.
It's raining in Pittsburgh, which is why Todd volunteered to be on the show today. We always appreciate it, Todd. Thank you so much and good luck with the weight loss.
No problem. I'll be speeding by you soon, Gilly Ice.
I'm sure you will be. That should be a sight to behold. NFL prop next, numbers game Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
An
Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The action never stops at BetMGM. Sign up now using bonus code VSiN1000 and your first wager's risk-free up to $1,000. BetMGM's state-of-the-art app offers a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, player props, daily boosted odds specials, and much more. No matter what your favorite sport is, you'll find out why nothing beats a win at the King of Sportsbooks. Simply download the BetMGM app today or go to BetMGM.com and enter bonus code VSiN1000 to make your first wager risk-free up to $1,000. Eligibility restrictions apply. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. New customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable free bets or site credit. Free bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offers not available in Nevada or New York. This is from, we get tweets, we get texts. This is from Las Vegas. Chris, who was kind enough to join us on the show yesterday, he said, what did he say here? He said, brutal comment from Todd that he'll be blowing by you weight-wise. Oh, he'll totally blow by me weight-wise. Totally. He is a professional weight loser. Now, some people object, including Chris, to the speed, the rate at which Todd is losing weight, believing that to be unhealthy. But as Todd would sort of reply, as he has in the past, is that worse than me having full-blown diabetes over three bills? So he is, should you fluctuate like that? No, you should not. But in Todd's case, the better of the two options, perhaps? But, oh, he's absolutely blowing by me. There's no doubt about it. I'm doing that thing like in a 4x100 where I'm just, like, running slowly ahead of him, grabbing it. But he'll absolutely get to me. No question about it. All right, Jeff Parlay is here as well, producer number 5 and 8. With more NFL props season long, we went through most interceptions yesterday in the National Football League. We have we did Coach of the Year. We did Comeback Player of the Year. What do you got today, sir?
We'll have a few options today. We'll start with this one. This is not the most complex market here, Gil, because we talk about teams that stink all the time. The lowest scoring team for this upcoming NFL season, and without much of a shock, there are a lot of bad teams in this league this year, Gil, going in.
What did you think of Drew's comment, by the way, at the end where he's like, for those of us who put out content in the NFL, that he thinks he might have more difficulty with that this year? I don't know. That was a fascinating comment to me.
I am never in the camp of that there isn't enough to talk about
me neither.
For football.
Me neither, man.
There may be some things that are a little bit different this year in this NFL season than we're used to.
We vomit football out of us.
But we all adapt usually to creating content for the NFL and for college football.
I'm sure he'll be fine too.
Very easy. I think we'll be all right in the long run. But going back to this real quick, Gil, the Texans are the short shot to be the lowest scoring team in the league at +550. The Bears are 6-1 along with the Falcons. The Carolina Panthers at 9-1 with the Seahawks. What are the Steelers doing at 11-1 at the same number as the Jets? Like, even with the question marks at quarterback, they'll still find ways to score on defense. That's a little bit surprising. And then everyone else, 14-1 or longer.
All right, let's go through last year's numbers.
Yeah, please.
Last year's numbers, lowest scoring teams in the National Football League last year. Lowest scoring team was the, for most of the season, led Urban Meyer Jacksonville Jaguars. They scored 253 points in 17 football games. Oh, my God, is that bad. 253. Texans were second. Were the Texans second? No. The New York Football Giants, 258. Just five more points. Danny Dimes, just five more points the Jaguars could muster. And then it's the Texans at 280 from last year. Rounding out the other worst teams in the NFL last year for fewest points scored, the Panthers, 304. That ain't good, but that was a lot of that without, of course, Christian McCaffrey. And then the Jets, your Jets at 310, finished in fourth in terms of the lowest amount of points scored. The Bears, by the way, 311. Finishing out the top five.
Yeah, and Atlanta 313. So there's a lot. It's jumbled once you get to the bottom half of the top five.
The question becomes with any of these markets. These, by the way, courtesy of DraftKings. Good on DraftKings for putting out so many different props that you can bet on already here during the summer. I think I would probably take a where are the Titans? Not even listed. Where are the Titans? I'm just curious about a long shot here that's not even on the board. Because, again, the Titans' wide receiving core is brutal. It's like Robert Woods coming off an injury and then someone that your average football fan wouldn't recognize another name on in terms of their wide receiving core. Obviously, they have Derrick Henry. I get it. But if you're looking to make a really long shot, I'm just curious what their number is.
35.
35-1 on the Titans. Okay, just throwing it out there. Of the ones listed on this board that are not as sexy as 35-1, I hate to say it, but maybe I don't hate to say it. It's not quite the short shot, but it's tough to look past the Falcons at 6-1, isn't it? Like, what's the argument for the Falcons at 6-1? That Marcus Mariota is a veteran quarterback? Okay. I just came up with that argument. I had mentioned that just now. Okay, I get it. But, I mean, I wouldn't have any problem with anybody saying the Falcons at 6-1.
No, I don't have a problem with Atlanta. I don't have a problem with Carolina.
How are the Patriots 18-1?
Well, the problem is once you start getting near the bottom here, you start seeing teams that are way shorter than they should be. I'm a little surprised. The Commanders and the Saints, not on this graphic, both have the same odds as the Jags and the Browns at 20-1.
Well, okay, so let's go to the Jags, who, again, as we said, had the fewest amount of points scored last year in the NFL. If the Jags end up with the fewest points again, you'll hate yourself for not betting this. Giants, by the way, 14-1. Jets, 11-1 of the horrible teams last year in terms of points scored. Don't at least a couple of those teams, if not all three, fall under the category of I'll believe it when I see it. I'll bet against it. I mean, I'll bet for winning this market, in other words. Prove me wrong, Jags, Giants, or Jets.
Yeah, I wouldn't bet the Jets number at what it's at. I would actually like a little bit more. The Giants at 14-1. The Giants are very difficult to figure out here in this market because sometimes we see a new head coach and a new system come in, and all of a sudden the team that was inept for years and years ends up putting together a good offense. So they're a little bit tough for me to touch. Jacksonville, yeah, we kind of know what Doug Peterson is as a head coach, Gil. We know what he is. We know what he did in Philadelphia. We know what he did with a healthy Carson Wentz.
We're giving him credit? We're giving Frank Reich credit. What are we doing?
I think it's a little bit of both of them, even though, again, Frank Reich, coach. I think Peterson doesn't get enough credit for what he did there. I mean, he won a Super Bowl with Nick Foles.
With all of these season long bets, right? But they were rolling just unbelievable dice every that team, that Philadelphia Eagles team, again using replay rules from the future to win the Super Bowl. You got that right, Eagles fans. You're welcome. Using replay rules from the future, which, remember, had Chris Collinsworth completely dumbfounded on replay during that Super Bowl, but just rolling the dice and coming up just absolutely great for them all year long on third and long that year. That was some of the more sustained ridiculousness for any Super Bowl champ. Hey, you still won the Super Bowl, Philadelphia Eagles. And yes, maybe I was the fan of an NFC East team that never wanted to see you win one. But I'm just saying, those things did happen that year. So, I don't know, Doug Peterson, are we giving him that much credit? I'm not. Good for him, but I'm not like going crazy about it. Back to the original point, though. With all of these season-long bets, the main things you have to remember is, well, first of all, the first thing you have to ask yourself, we don't have DraftKings available to us here in Nevada, and so I have to ask myself, would I bet this actually if this were available to me? Right? Hypothetical is one thing, and I will say, oh, if I had this, I would absolutely bet this season-long. I don't think I'm not sure I would bet this market, Jeff, but I will tell you what I would certainly only bet. As much as I said, oh, the Falcons, that's pretty tough to argue against. I think you only bet long shots here. You only bet long shots. Like, you have to be, the notion of having the Falcons at 6-1 and waiting all year for that to manifest, you got to have pretty serious conviction. Because as you said, these things change from year to year. But give me the Jags at 20-1 or the Titans at 35-1 or even the Giants at 14-1. Yeah, that I'd be more interested in. Would I pull the trigger on this bet? I don't know that I would.
Probably not. Also, too, we haven't mentioned the Seahawks at all.
You're right.
Who are going into the season with a bad quarterback, regardless of who wins that position. And you're going to have Pete Carroll wanting to run the ball 40 times a game with average running backs. It's not a bad one either.
Not a bad one. But I think with a lot of these numbers, like unlike, for instance, when we were going through comeback player of the year and coach of the year, like I think I would actually bet those. Coach of the year, for instance, I mean, specifically for real, I would bet that for all the reasons we stated when we went through that last week. This one, I don't know. But if I did, it would be a long shot for sure. We'll do some more of these NFL props a little later on the show. Something that perhaps we would bet. Coming back, the MLB Q2 Derivative Show next with Mark Borchardt, Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.